Today is Wednesday, October 11th. We're going to be working on more muscular system information today, including excitation, contraction, coupling. All right, so let's go back and take a little bit of review material. Before this test, we talked about some new terminology related to muscles. We know that muscle fibers are just an alternate name for a muscle cell. You know, when muscles grow, they fuse together, and that's how they become multinucleate. And so a muscle fiber or muscle cell may be a foot long, it may be 18 inches long. It just depends on where your body that muscle is located. So I just want to mention those two terms are interchangeable. We also talked about the fact that the plasma membrane of your muscle cell is called a sarcolemma. It's just an alternate name, so we want to feel comfortable going back and forth between those two terms. Likewise, the cytoplasm is also called the sarcoplasm. That prefix sarco tells us what?
Muscle.
Good. Actually, we're not even there yet. We're actually back on page 77. I'm just going to hit some of that material, and then I'm going to get through 79, 80.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, just checking. Caleb. On page 79, those first three blanks, the top one there, the connective tissue covering the outside is epimysium.
Is it 79?
Yeah, top of, oh, sorry, 77. Yeah. Number one on the top of that is that what you're on, 77 or 79?
77.
Okay, yeah, epimysium is your number one blank. Let's see, perimysium is your number two blank. And the part that wraps around an individual muscle for number three is endomysium or endomysium. Bottom of the page, number one down there, that is for plasma membrane, which is the sarcolemma. Number one's blank at the bottom is sarcolemma. The blank directly beneath that is sarcoplasm. And number two is at the very bottom is myofibril. Number two at the very bottom is myofibril. You know, since we're on the bottom of page 77, we did not talk about T-tubules last class period. I do want to mention those since they're an important part of how the muscle works. The T-tubule is actually a piece of the sarcolemma. So to make sure I'm not speaking Greek here, sarcolemma is another name for
plasma
membrane. Yeah. The reason they call it a T-tubule is because it forms a T-shape. And in this picture, you're looking at myofibrils wrapped by a membrane here. We'll talk about that one a little later. But these T-tubules carry the nerve impulse deep down into the nerve or into the muscle tissue. So they are actually making a T-shaped indentation. They're called transverse tubules, but in fact they have a T-shaped appearance. And in this picture you can see other T-tubules. They actually dive deep into the muscle tissue. That way a nerve impulse can reach all parts of the muscle at one time, and the muscle can contract together as a unit. And that's what we're going for. Okay, so what I want to do is introduce you to pages, now I think we're on 79, right? That picture on 79. And we're going to talk about these structures that are part of a myofibril. So to review, what is a myofibril? Good. part of a muscle cell. In fact, it's an organelle inside a muscle cell. And we know that muscles produce movement through contractions. So it is at this level of the organelle that we're now going to look. And this organelle, this myofibril, is what's going to shorten to produce a muscle contraction. So we haven't worked at this level of detail before. We haven't really worked with organelles in this much gory detail, but here we go. You're looking at a muscle cell's myofibril. They're stacked inside those muscle cells like long little tubes. And what you're looking at here is actually the arrangement of proteins inside that muscle's myofibril. So we're going to label this. We're going to call this structure here a sarcomere. I'm going to start by bracketing off that sarcomere. And by the way, what is sarco?
Muscle.
Good. Sarco is muscle. Proteins that build muscle. I think we all knew that before we ever stepped foot in here, right? Proteins build muscle. And what you're looking at is actually protein structure inside a myofibril. The sarcomere happens to be a unit of your myofibril, and it's going to shorten as the muscle contracts and these proteins slide past one another. So let's start by identifying those proteins. The first protein that's easy to spot is called a thick filament, made up of what protein? Thick filaments are made up of?
Myosin.
Yeah. Thick filaments are made up of myosin. That's in there somewhere, right? Okay. Just making sure. And myosin filaments have little bumps sticking off called myosin heads. Yeah, we want to look for those too. Protein that we're looking for is called a thin filament, and thin filaments are made of a different kind of protein called
actin.
Good. And they're anchored to a Z-line. Okay, these thin or actin filaments are anchored to a Z-line. And so how would you describe the appearance of a Z-line?
Zigzag.
Zigzag Z-shaped, good. So we will look for one of those Z-lines. Just outline that. Some books call them a Z-disc. So Z lines or Z discs anchor your thin filaments. And by the way, that's what we look for when we're trying to identify a sarcomere. One Z line to the next Z line is going to be your sarcomere.
That's for the thin filaments.
Yeah, thin filaments anchor to your Z lines. That's right. So far, so good. Okay. There's also a light and dark banding pattern here. I know when we learned muscles, we talked about them being striated. And striations is just another word for being a striped appearance muscle tissue. Well, the striping actually comes from light and dark banding patterns. And I know it's kind of hard to see at this detailed view, but we're going to zoom out in just a minute and you can actually see the light and dark repetitions. So if I'm trying to find a dark band, what part should I circle? Thick filaments, yeah. And not only the thick filaments, we won't catch those Z lines in it. So why don't we circle our A band, which is just thick filaments. Notice that we caught a little bit of those thin filaments in our A band. You know, it's kind of impossible to circle your thick filaments without catching a piece of the thin sticking in there, but that's okay. Now, if you look in a very central zone, you might say, of that A band, there is a region of the A band where there are no thin filaments. That particular region has a name. It's called the H zone. Yeah, that middle region right through here. Don't catch the thick filaments, don't catch the thin filaments. Notice right through the middle, there is no thin. That is our H zone. Muscle contraction occurs, the myosin heads on the thick filaments reach up and grab the thin filaments. I kind of liken it to being in a boat and putting your oar in the water. And then if you want to go somewhere and you're in a boat with oars, you just don't put your oars in the water and sit there, do you?
No.
You stroke. Okay? And so that's what those heads do. They reach, they grab the thin filaments, and they stroke. So what they're doing is they're pulling those thin filaments, causing them to slide. Well, when our muscles contract, they are actually sliding these thin filaments past thick, and that causes our sarcomere to become shorter. So if you're shortening up your muscle, what happens to the distance between these Z lines?
They get closer,
right. And if you start sliding these Z lines toward the center of your H zone, now what starts invading your H zone?
Thin filaments,
right. And so we technically say that your H zone will disappear. Yeah, so if you start moving thin filaments into that H zone does disappear, okay? So I'm just kind of trying to get the gears going here for what is actually a sliding filament theory for muscle contraction. We haven't circled the areas around those Z lines. If we circle the Z line and any thin filaments right around them, we have a light colored band called I band. Good. Let's circle that. Let's label it I band. Keep it straight. The dark bands are the A bands. The I bands are the light bands. And of course, dark has an A, light has an I. And just to take a moment to break it down once again, the A band contains thick filaments and what else? Just a little bit of thin, right. And an I band or light band contains two things. What are they?
Z line and thin filaments.
Yeah, Z line and thin filaments. Good. You guys probably saw that on page 80 there is an answered copy for you. So if you would like to compare your drawing to that labeled one, you do have one in your course pack. The textbook also has some nice pictures too, so that's another great way to kind of make sure you've got all those parts labeled down correctly. Alright, so let's review. We have a sarcomere, which is a unit of our Meyer spiral. It runs from one what to the next what?
Z-line to the next Z-line.
Good. Z-line to Z-line. And when muscles contract, what happens to the length of our sarcomere?
It
shortens. Good. Now, in our sarcomere, we have an A band. Is it considered a light or dark band?
Dark band.
Dark band. Good. And it includes two filaments. They are?
Thick
filaments and a little bit of thin. And which of those two filaments is anchored to a Z line?
The thin filament.
Good. Now, the Z line and the thin filaments just around it make up a different color band. This one is called?
I band.
It's a light band. Good. All right. And so in order to produce a muscle contraction, what is going to grab a hold of the thin filaments?
Myosin heads.
Good. Okay. I'm assuming that you've had a little bit of this from maybe Bio 110. Okay. What I'd like to do is kind of go into a little more detail with a couple of parts here, show you some pictures. Anybody need this board before I put the screen down? Y'all good? Okay. So, you know, when we talk about striations and we talk about skeletal muscle tissue, this is what we mean. We mean light and dark banding patterns. And I think you can tell that there's a darker band here. That is our A band. And the light band is called our what?
I
band. Yeah. And right in the center of that I band, you can see a Z line. So pretty cool that you now look at this and you say, oh, okay, now I know what's going on with the light and the dark banding patterns. When muscles contract, the I band disappears. So, in fact, if you were to look at a contracted muscle, you wouldn't have evenly spaced light and dark bands going one past another. That I band would be shrunk down and hardly visible. So that's kind of cool that you can look at a picture of a muscle and actually know if it's in a relaxed state or in a contracted state. This is another look at repeating sarcomeres, and they are running at an angle across this picture. Let's see, can you recognize what this is? There's another one here.
Is
an I band, and what's dead center in that I band?
Z line.
Yep, that's a Z line. That's a Z line. Here's another one down here. And the reason we know they're Z lines is because they're in the middle of a light band, which is an I band. So what kinds of filaments are only in that I band? Yeah, thin filaments. And then you've got an area of dark right through here. This dark band, of course, is our A band. And you can see a slightly lighter area through the middle. That's called our
H zone.
Good. And there's a line there, too, that you can sometimes see showing up. So kind of cool that you can look at this and say, hey, this is muscle micrograph or muscle picture. And you can still see the light bands and the dark bands repeating over and over. So in fact, this is what relaxed muscle looks like at the top of our picture. And notice the bottom picture shows us contracted muscle. What's happened to the length of the sarcomere in the contracted muscle?
Shortens.
So a sarcomere runs from one Z line to the next Z line. And there they go. They are actually moved closer together. What moved them closer together? Good. And what did they grab a hold of and pull? Good, actin or thin. So it's just like, you know, using your hands and fingers as an accordion, slide them back and forth using those myosin heads. Good. Just want to show you up close in detail how the myosin filament looks. There is a myosin head. I think it looks like a golf club sticking up. Okay. I do want to share with you the details of a thin filament. You know, in Bio-110, we talk about them as being actin or thin filaments, and that's about as much detail as we give. There's actually three parts of a thin filament, and I'll make sure I go over these with you. Okay, so a thin filament is actually three muscle tissues, or three muscle proteins, rather, A, T, and T. Okay? Thin filaments are actually three proteins. They are A, T, and T, which stands for actin, troponin, and tropomyosin. And I believe I've got some of this in your course pack for you. It should be detailed on page 81. So we normally call a thin filament an actin filament. That is the predominant protein in a thin filament. Okay, and in this picture, it appears to be the bluish-purple string of beads. So these are all actin filaments in this particular picture. There is also a rope called tropomyosin. Tropomyosin is going to cover up binding sites. Well, if you want to contract a muscle, you want to reveal the binding sites. But if you want the muscle to stay at rest, cover up the binding sites. What do you think the advantage is of having this rope that blindfolds those binding sites?
Your muscles would contract and burn out your energy.
You'd burn out your energy and your muscles would contract constantly and you'd be in a heap of mess with your muscles moving all the time, right? So we may have a way here to prevent unwanted or uncontrolled extra muscle contractions. Just cover up the binding sites when you don't want the muscle to contract. So we need a way to raise and lower that rope of tropomyosin. It's kind of like a blindfold. If you want to be able to expose the binding sites, you just raise that rope up. And if you want to cover the binding sites, you just lower it back down. So I kind of think of that as a control or a drawbridge mechanism. And that's where the troponin complex comes in. So troponin is going to be the one that regulates whether or not that tropomyosin rope either covers the binding sites or reveals the binding sites. Okay? So to repeat, we've got three pieces or three proteins in a typical thin filament. We've got the bluish purple portion. Those are the actin filaments. We have a rope called tropomyosin. What's its job? Covers binding sites or activation sites, reveals them when you want to have a muscle contraction. And then, of course, here you've got the troponin complex, and that's the thing that regulates whether or not the rope is covering the binding sites or moving to reveal those binding sites. So let me give you an analogy to kind of think of this in another way. You know, we don't have a whole lot of drawbridges nowadays, right? You ever been across a drawbridge before? So usually there's a person that works in the drawbridge, and if a boat comes, they make the cars stop, and then they say, okay, boat can travel through. So I think of them, let's say it's a man that works in that drawbridge facility, that is troponin. So he decides, okay, this drawbridge needs to be raised, I'm going to let the boats come through. He decides when that bridge goes back down. The bridge is actually that tropomyosin rope. If you move the rope out of the way, you let the muscle contraction occur. If you let the tropomyosin rope slip back into position, what happens then? Can you do muscle contraction when the tropomyosin's covering up binding sites? Mm-hmm. You're just sitting there, right? So there is no movement when there is a rope covering those binding sites. So that troponin decides whether or not you reveal the binding sites and lift the rope, or whether you let the rope just sit there and prevent muscle contraction from occurring, okay? And that should be on the bottom of page 81. Let's you look at this picture here for just a moment. We are comparing a relaxed thin filament to a thin filament that's experiencing a contraction. And what do you notice is different between those two pictures?
The weight of rope.
Yeah, notice that rope of tropomyosin. In the top picture, the relaxed picture, what is that rope doing?
Covering the binding sites.
Covering the binding sites, good. And in the bottom picture, what happens to those binding sites?
They are exposed.
So how do you expose the binding sites?
The troponin
tells the tropomyosin rope to raise, and of course that rope now reveals binding sites sitting down here on those actin filaments. Okay, so these are the binding sites that look like little black eyeballs on each of those actin filaments. Something else here, there's a detail we have not yet talked about. What particularly binds that rope of troponin, or binds that regulator of troponin to make the rope of tropomyosin move up?
Calcium,
good. Okay, so that's an important thing to notice, that we need calcium to bind to troponin in order to make that rope of tropomyosin move. So let's go back to our analogy. You've got a guy working a drawbridge. He is the troponin molecule. And the rope, the tropomyosin, is the drawbridge. Imagine that every time you want to pass through that drawbridge as a boat, you have to pay that guy in the drawbridge to open up the gates for you. Okay? So in this instance, what are we paying that drawbridge operator with?
Calcium.
Good. Let me go back a few slides. This is a good one here. This one, muscle fibers and myofibrils. You'll notice that each of these myofibrils is surrounded by a lacy sleeve called a sarcoplasmic reticulum. Let's just make it simple and call it SR for short. That stores the calcium needed for that troponin molecule. Okay, so, you know, we've heard of rough ER, we've heard of smooth ER, now we have SR. And the only job here is for SR to store that calcium when it's not being used to pay off that troponin molecule. Okay, so where do you stop? Where do I need to repeat? Where do we need to go back to? Sure.
In that analogy that you're using with the drawbridge, what would the actin be?
The actin would be part of your drawbridge. We could just say it's like the road.
No.
So it's not really a major player in this this part. Okay, so let's go through this one more time. What we have is a rope of actin. It is covered up by another rope called tropomyosin. And that tropomyosin is important because it covers myosin binding sites on that actin molecule. All right, and the way that we move that rope of tropomyosin is by giving a calcium ion to what?
To troponin.
And when we give calcium to troponin, what happens to the rope of tropomyosin?
It lifts up.
Lifts up, good. And what does that reveal?
Binding sites,
good. So that allows for the myosin heads to bind with that rope of actin, and that's how we start this whole sliding and contraction process. All right, so there's a lot going on in this animation. This one's titled Actin and Myosin Power Stroking. And what we want to pay attention to, first of all, is this myosin head that looks like a golf club. It is attaching, and it releases, it attaches, it pivots, releases, and it keeps doing this over and over. So in order for it to be released from this yellow actin filament, what is going to have to bind to your myosin head? ATP turns into ADP. That powers that head to be released from that binding site. So that's actually part of what's making this head pivot and move, is that that power from that ATP molecule. Okay, so we say this head is walking along, and you ever look at your Velcro up close? I don't know how much time you have on your hands to stare at Velcro. But I encourage you to look at Velcro. There's a hook on one piece of your Velcro and a loop on the other end, right? So that head is kind of like the hook. It hooks on, it pulls. We give it some ATP, it releases. It hooks on, it pulls, releases. And it does this over and over. And we say that those heads are grabbing and walking along those thin filaments. And when they do that, when they grab on, they're going to pull those thin filaments. Well, if they pull those thin filaments, that's going to make your sarcomere do what?
Shorten
and contract, exactly. All right, so that's one thing to notice in this animation. The second thing let's pay attention to is calcium. It is a little yellow ball. There it is. Okay, so what is it binding? Troponin, yeah, and when it binds to troponin, watch the rope move.
The rope moves and the activation sites become exposed.
Good. That rope moves, those activation sites become exposed, and what can bind to those activation sites?
The
myosin head, right. And if there was no calcium, there would be no...
There'd be
no way for this to contract, right? So every time that myosin head grabs on an exposed binding site, we have a name for that. It's called a cross bridge. Okay? So every time that myosin head grabs onto a binding site, we call it a cross bridge. Every time that myosin head grabs onto a binding site, we call that a cross bridge. And by the way, that stuff is actually over. I'm kind of previewing 83, 84 right now.
81.
81, too? Okay, that's good. Yeah, about halfway down the page under myofilaments. Every time that myosin head grabs onto an actin binding site, we say we formed a cross bridge. And just like rowing your boat, you don't just put your oars in the water and expect to move, right? You've got to do a stroke to get your boat to move. And so watch that head when it binds and creates a cross bridge. It pivots. And once it pivots, it forms a power stroke. So cross bridge formation is followed by a pivoting of that head. The power stroke then pulls that thin filament. Okay? So we've got a cross bridge where the head binds, but the head pivots. That power stroke is what pulls those thin filaments. Sure. Once the head binds the actin binding site, we have a cross bridge. Okay? And when the head pivots, we form a power stroke, and that power stroke pulls those thin filaments. Okay, so once you form a cross bridge, the head pivots, that forms a power stroke, and what does the power stroke accomplish?
It pulls
that thin filament, good. So what we're talking about is called the sliding filament theory. And if you break down the words, it makes good sense. We are actually pulling and sliding those thin filaments. And do what? Good. Move it closer to the middle of that H zone. That H zone disappears. What happens to your sarcomere? It shortens, right. So what we're actually doing is the process that causes muscles to contract and shorten, okay? So let's kind of think big picture here for just a moment. Where did that calcium come from that's binding to your troponin molecule? Where is it stored? It could be stored in your bones, but we have a more convenient location.
SR.
Yeah. Now take it back. If you don't have enough calcium for your SR, where do you get it from? From your bones. And what hormone helps to raise blood calcium levels?
PTH.
Good. Using bone destroying cells called?
Osteoclast.
Right. So this is why you don't have time for a milk craving and some ice cream. You've got to have calcium right now because cardiac muscle works this way, so does smooth muscle. And so, of course, skeletal muscle requires calcium when it needs it for contraction. So that's why we have an instant storehouse in our bones for that calcium. Okay, something else to think about, let's go back to our animation. And when people die, sometimes their body becomes stiff and rigor mortis. This occurs sometimes around 24 to 72 hours after death. And if the body is left in a position for longer than that rigor, then we can move the body once again. So what is happening in this mechanism here with the heads and the filaments that causes us to not be able to move somebody's arms and legs?
Because as their body's used up all the calcium stores, body can no longer have any more or any fear, no power to be able to...
There you go. No ATP. Yeah, they're dead. So how do you get that head to release from those thin filaments?
ATP.
And once a person dies, ain't no more ATP. So that head stays locked on to that thin filament, and whatever position they may have been sitting in is what they're locked in until the body starts to decompose. So if they wait a certain time period, then they can get those arms and legs to move once again. So rigor actually comes from the lack of ATP. So unfortunately, those heads lock on. So if I run through these three pictures pretty fast, you can see what happens to the length of the sarcomere. This just reinforces what we know. When a muscle is relaxed, you expect to see I bands and H zones. But notice when the muscle contracts, what happens to the I band and H zone?
They disappear.
Good. Something else to appreciate. Look at the distance between our Z lines. That distance is known as
sarcomere.
Good. And once again, when we run through these three pictures, what happens to the length of that sarcomere?
It shortens.
Good. So we know that the sliding of these filaments past one another is what promotes a shortening of the muscle. One really important thing to appreciate is this. In all three pictures, do you see any change in the length of your thick filament or your thin filament? Thin filaments and thick filaments, they don't change, right? So in fact, the only thing that shortens here is your? Sarcomere, exactly. So I think sometimes we have this mental idea that things bunch up and shorten, but not in the case of muscles. We are actually just letting those pieces slide past. And of course, sliding filament. What's that, Jordan?
I was saying they just slide closer together.
They do, they slide closer together, exactly. Okay, so I've got a little short video for us to watch. Purposely have the sound off because you guys can go home and look at this. It's on D2L in the content area and turn on the sound. It's got narration to it. When you know you've got it, you can turn the sound off and narrate it. That's how comfortable you want to be come test day, is watch the video and then you become the narrator for it, right? So what we're looking at here is a sarcomere. We have our Z lines over here and here. In red, we have our thick filaments or myosin filaments. And then what are these yellow pieces?
Thin
filaments, good. They're actually showing that muscle contracting. We're gonna zoom in now and look at a myosin head. This entire structure is our thin filament. And what is calcium going to come and bind to?
Troponin.
Troponin. When it binds troponin, what happens next?
It rolls and covers the binding sites.
Good, there you go. Tropomyosin moves. We've now revealed the binding sites on those actin filaments. And the myosin head did what?
The myosin head
cross-bridge. Yeah, good. To release that head and start over, we have to give it a ATP. Good. All right, so this is obviously in slow motion. Your real muscles work in a split-second fashion. How fast you can think it is how fast those muscles respond with this whole entire process, which is kind of a daunting thought. So here we go. We've got calcium making those binding sites on actin revealed. We just formed a cross bridge when that head reached up and attached to that binding site. What's the next step after having formed a cross bridge? Power stroke. Yep, make that head pivot, make it slide. And now you want to repeat this over and over until you shorten your muscle. And so how do you power the release of the head?
ATP.
Good. I think of the snake we had in the hallway, how it struck.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that head's doing. It's striking, and it's going to pivot. So it's not just going to attach. It's going to bind and pull those thin filaments. Alright, so now it's back in what they call a cocked position, and this is in reality what's happening. Those heads are walking along, sliding and pulling those thin filaments. That is worth the entire animation, is to see that.
Oh, wow.
And so I kind of think here of row, row, row your boat. As those heads pull, watch those thin filaments come toward the center of the sarcomere. There goes your H zone, it was gone. And what's happening now? Relax, your H zone is back. Where do we store that calcium?
In SR.
In the SR, right, because we'll use it again next time around. So notice when we're done with the muscle contraction, we release the calcium. That allows that rope of tropomyosin to recover the binding sites, and no muscle contraction can occur when those binding sites are covered off. Okay, let's do it again. Okay. In order to start the cross, I don't think I have it on play. Let's see. Oh, I did. Okay, in order to start that cross bridge cycle, we have to use calcium. What does calcium bind to on this whole mechanism?
Troponin.
Good. And once you bind troponin, what happens next? Good. Tropomyosin reveals binding sites. The myosin head reaches up and forms a cross bridge. And the next step is for it to pivot, forming a power stroke. And what is accomplished now?
It's
contracting, it's sliding, right. Now, we need to repeat this over and over to promote a shortening of the muscle. So in order to release the head, what do you give it?
ATP.
ATP. So this is just not a one and done process. You have to bind, pivot, you know, power stroke, release, and then repeat. Okay, and so you can see the head's literally walking along, cross bridges, power stroking, pulling and sliding those thin filaments.
So the ATP turns to ATP to let go of the myosin so it can reattach it.
Exactly. Yeah, we actually hydrolyze an ATP into an ADP and a phosphate group, and that phosphate group is what powers that head to be released. But we didn't get into all that detail. So when you're done with the muscle contraction, let that calcium go back for storage in the SR. Good. And since there's no more calcium, that rope of tropomyosin will now
cover up sites.
Yep, cover up those binding or activation sites. And is it possible for a cross bridge to take place?
No.
Not now. Okay, so that kind of does it. It's a done deal for doing our muscle contraction. How comfortable are you starting to be with this stuff? Just got to do it again. Okay. So why don't we move on and cover the excitation portion, and then, you know, let your neurons make connections there, and then we can certainly repeat this process. All right. So what we'd like to do now is cover page 83. Okay, page 83 and 84 are going to detail some of what we've already done, but I've got to give you the backstory first on how a muscle gets excited in the first place. So they got this real fancy name for the process. It's called excitation contraction coupling, and we've actually done the contraction portion already. So let's now fill in with the excitement portion, how you excite that muscle cell. To excite a muscle cell means that you're going to tell it, hey, we want you to contract. And we have to do that with a series of usually chemicals. So we're going to use a chemical called a neurotransmitter to tell our muscle cell to get excited. And we've already covered that contraction part here with the sliding filament theory. So when you want to move your skeletal muscles, you come up with the idea in your brain. You send the message down your spinal cord, and the message then travels out the appropriate spinal nerve to the body part that you want to move. And when the message arrives there, you're going to send acetylcholine, a type of neurotransmitter, to those muscle cells to tell them to contract. So a neurotransmitter is just a way for us to communicate, because these nerves and those muscles don't actually touch. So we have to use a chemical traveling between the two of them to send the message of, hey, got a message for you, and it's to contract. What we're looking at in this picture is called a motor unit. The motor unit is the motor neuron that's going to stimulate those muscle cells and all the muscle cells that are under its control. So when this motor neuron says to this group of motor cells, contract, they're all going to do it together as a unit. How do we tell that set of muscle cells to contract? Yeah, neurotransmitter, good. And the one we're going to use is called?
Acetylcholine,
good. And so we're going to abbreviate it as ACH, just another fancy name for acetylcholine. Let's zoom in on that motor unit and take a closer look at a neuromuscular junction. The neuromuscular junction tells you that this is a junction between the neuron and the muscle. So now what we're doing is taking this big picture and zooming in on just one axon terminal and the one particular muscle cell that it stimulates. Okay, so you can see in these pictures pieces of skeletal muscle tissue and the individual axon terminal that does that innervation or that zap of acetylcholine to that muscle cell. So in this picture, kind of drives home that point that you've got to have an axon terminal sitting on each muscle cell in order for it to be able to get excited and respond. Okay, so let's turn it sideways. This is still a neuromuscular junction. What two parts do you find in a neuromuscular junction?
Axon terminals.
Axon terminals and a muscle cell. Yeah. So all we're doing is taking these previous pictures where you've got an axon terminal of a neuron and the muscle cell, and we're just zooming in and turning it sideways. Do the two touch? They don't touch. Yeah. So there's a little gap of interstitial fluid between the two. And in order for us to communicate, we actually have to use a neurotransmitter, acetylcholine, that's released from your axon terminal and sent right next door to your neighboring muscle cell. Okay. So let's talk about the gap of space here. There is that little tiny gap of space between your axon terminal and the muscle cell. We call it a synapse or a synaptic cleft. Ooh, that must have hurt. By the way, that is a blank for you about halfway down page 83. The gap of space between the muscle cell and the axon terminal is called a synapse, or you can call it a synaptic cleft.
Cleft,
yeah. So when do you think the axon terminal should release acetylcholine?
When the muscle needs to contract,
good. When the muscle needs to stay relaxed, what should you do with acetylcholine?
Store it.
Yeah, store it. Get it back up there in the axon terminal. So the only time you should see acetylcholine in that synaptic cleft is? Yeah, when you want to get ready to contract, exactly. All right. So let's decide that you want to pick up your pencil and write, and your brain sends a message down your spinal cord and out a spinal nerve to your arm, and your spinal nerve or motor nerve is going to tell your muscles that you want to write something. And so what we have here is an axon terminal and its motor that motor setup with that neighboring muscle cell, and you'll notice we've got a gap of space between the two. That's our synaptic cleft. So when the nerve impulse comes down to that axon terminal, the axon terminal is going to let calcium, here comes calcium into our axon terminal. So right here you can see calcium coming into the axon terminal when that nerve impulse arrives in that axon terminal. Now, this calcium is going to come from your bones, it's going to be in your interstitial fluid, and so it's not the calcium that's stored in your SR. Just want to put that out there, okay? That calcium inside your axon terminal allows for these little vesicles here full of acetylcholine to be released. No calcium, no release of acetylcholine. Okay? So the calcium has to be present in the axon terminal in order for us to release vesicles full of neurotransmitter. Once calcium's in there, those little vesicles exit by exocytosis. I know that's digging back into our earlier content. I think of them as little blisters that pop on the end of our axon terminal, and out comes acetylcholine. Okay? So what allows for acetylcholine to be released from your axon terminal?
Calcium.
Yep. And when acetylcholine is ruptured from the exocytosis process, it ends up in a gap of space between your two cells. That gap is known as? Yep, synaptic cleft. Well, those acetylcholine molecules travel across to your sarcolemma, and here they bind to receptor sites sitting on sodium channels. When acetylcholine binds those receptors on those sodium channels go from a closed state to an open state. Good. All right, so what do you think sodium hanging out here is going to do? Travel through those channels, comes into that cell, and that cell now becomes excited, and the sarcoplasmic reticulum inside that muscle now releases what?
Calcium.
Good. And once you release calcium inside your muscle cell, you can now start the process of contraction. Yeah. All right, so let's do this one more time. In order to make an excitement process begin, the nerve impulse travels down your axon terminal, and the excitement causes calcium to enter through open calcium channels. Why is it important that we have calcium inside our axon terminal?
Release the ACH.
Release the ACH, good. And ACH is currently packaged up into little sacs known as
vesicles,
and they exit by exocytosis, so like little blisters that pop, and then of course that acetylcholine is sitting in a gap between your nerve and muscle. That gap is called
synaptic cleft.
Good. Now once in that synaptic cleft, what is your acetylcholine going to do? Good. Find the sodium channels. The sodium channels open. Sodium comes into the muscle.
And it excites the muscle and the calcium gets released.
Good. And then, of course, calcium now gets released from your sarcoplasmic reticulum, and you start the second half of the story, which is contraction. So to kind of wrap up today, let me show you a quick animation on nerve impulse transmission. So what you're looking at here is called a motor unit. This is a motor neuron and the skeletal muscle that it's going to stimulate. We're going to zoom in on a single axon terminal. It looks like a little fingertip, and the individual muscle cell that it serves. That particular relationship is called a neuromuscular junction. Okay, and so you can see a bunch of axon terminals here. And now we're looking specifically at a neuromuscular junction, just that relationship between the axon terminal in yellow here and this underlying muscle cell. Just for reference, what you're looking at here is the sarcolemma of your muscle cell, and that going down is a T-tubule. So the nerve impulse has arrived in our axon terminal. In order for us to release these vesicles of neurotransmitter, what has to enter our axon terminal?
Calcium.
Calcium, good. Now, calcium allows for these vesicles to rupture. They allow for ACH to exit by exocytosis. And it travels out into the synaptic cleft where it binds to
sodium
channels, good. And so once acetylcholine binds a sodium channel, what happens to the sodium channel?
It opens up.
Opens up, and what happens next? Sodium's going to come into that muscle like we see here. Good, excites the muscle, and the muscle will then, of course, allow calcium to be released
from the SR.
Good. I wanted to show you, in this animation, these pieces that you're going to start to see in a moment that dive deep into the muscle cell are the T-tubules, and they're about to come into view now. There's a T-tubule, there's one on the left side, and right there in a very dark blue, that is your sarcoplasmic reticulum, and that excitement goes right to that SR and tells it to release calcium. One piece that we did not yet cover is this. If you don't want muscle contraction to occur, then you got to get rid of that acetylcholine. So where do you put it?
Back in the terminal.
Back in that axon terminal. If you've had psych, they call it reuptake. Okay, and so we use an enzyme here called acetylcholinesterase. You can call it ACHE for short. And I tell you what, it spells ache. And if you don't use ACHE, you will in fact ache from having excess muscle contractions. So ACHE or acetylcholinesterase is going to be part of what we talk about in here on Wednesday or Monday. I got some blanks to fill in for you on pages 83, 84. I can either give them to you now or I can give them to you Monday. Give them to you now? Okay. Page 83, halfway down, you may have already filled in synaptic cleft. Let's see, down below under excitation, ACHE, there we go again, breaks down ACH. Why do we need to do this? Yep, return ACH to the axon terminal. And Tammy, you had it. Prevent further muscle contraction. That's it. Good, so return that acetylcholine to the axon terminal. Return acetylcholine to the axon terminal and prevent further muscle contractions. Return ACH to the axon terminal and prevent further muscle contractions. Number three, acetylcholine causes your sarcolemma to become temporarily permeable to
sodium.
Good. And on page 84, now we're looking at contraction. That excitement or action potential causes your SR. There's our blank, causes the SR. Yep, to release stored calcium. Good. So I think you've got all the blanks. Y'all have a great weekend. We'll hit this again on Monday.